Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 10. Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, Text 31.
Evam Vinagadanti Nam.
Evam Vinagadanti Nam.
Satyana Pura Yoshita. Drikshanena Vinandam.
Drikshanena Vinandam.
Sasmatena Yayo Vedi.
Evam
Vita. In this way. Gadantina. Thus praying and talking about him.
Sa.
He. The Lord.
Gina.
Of words.
Pura Yoshita.
Of the ladies of the capital.
Nirikshanena.
By his grace of glancing over them.
Abhinandan.
And greeting them.
Sasmatena.
With a smiling face.
Yayo.
Departed.
Hari.
The personality of Godhead. Translation. While the ladies of the capital of Hastinapura were greeting him and talking in this way, the Lord, smiling, accepted their good greetings, and casting the grace of his glance over them, he departed from the city. Text 32. Maharaj Yudhisthira, although no one's enemy, engaged 4 divisions of defense, horse, elephant, chariot, and army, to accompany Lord Krishna, the enemy of the Asuras, demons. The Maharaj did this because of the enemy and also out of affection for the Lord. Purport. Natural defensive measures are horses and elephants combined with chariots and men. Horses and elephants are trained to move to any part of the hills or forests and plains. The charioteers could fight with many horses and elephants by the strength of powerful arrows, even up to the standard of the Brahmastra, similar to modern atomic weapons. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew well that Krishna is everyone's friend and well-wisher, and yet there were asuras who were by nature envious of the Lord. So out of fear of attack from others, and out of affection also, he engaged all varieties of defensive forces as bodyguards of Lord Krishna. If required, Lord Krishna himself was sufficient to defend himself from the attack of others who counted the Lord as their enemy. But still he accepted all the arrangements made by Maharaj Yudhisthira because he could not disobey the king, who was his elder cousin. The Lord plays the part of a subordinate in his transcendental sporting, and thus sometimes he puts himself in the care of Yashoda Mata for his protection in his so-called helplessness of childhood. That is the transcendental lila, or pastime of the Lord. The basic principle for all transcendental exchanges between the Lord and his devotees is exhibited to enjoy a transcendental bliss for which there is no comparison even up to the level of Brahmananda. Om Ganatimadandasya Gananjana Shrakaya Chakshumilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Guru Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare.
Just think, another day of hearing about Krishna. Do you ever get tired of it? Simply by hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna, the core of our hearts becomes cleansed, and we make gradual, progressive spiritual advancement. Sometimes that advancement is so to our ordinary vision, slow, that we think nothing is happening at all. And then Maya gets into our head and says, come back to me, I'll make things happen for you. You need dynamics. You're not getting those dynamics in devotional service. Be honest. It's good, but it's not working for you. You need to do something that's quicker with results and more fulfilling immediately. And what is best for that? Contact with the material energy. Come back. That is the song Maya always sings. We need to look at ourselves from a different angle. And Srimad Bhagavatam is providing that accurate angle from which we can actually see ourselves. You can see through Srimad Bhagavatam how your contaminations are coming out. They're becoming visible, and this way you're becoming purified. We shouldn't be afraid of our contaminations coming out. That's a sign of progress. As I often explain, Krishna says himself in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham avanikam partham aham jnana jantama nasyami atma bhavasto jnana deepena bhashvata. Krishna says, out of compassion, I, dwelling in your heart, will turn on the shining lamp of knowledge and dispel the darkness of ignorance. So when Krishna turns on the light and we can see all the monsters in the lagoon, why are we afraid? He's doing us a favor. Oh no, what is this in me? I never knew that was there, or I never noticed it. How will I ever be Krishna conscious? It's impossible. Just look at these monsters within. But Krishna has blessed you, letting you see. And then you can take action. So we have to actually be able to understand how Krishna does things. Otherwise, we will lose our dedication. And when you lose your dedication to Krishna's service, again, you become dedicated to serving the illusory energy. We don't want that to happen. Therefore, we need regular hearing and chanting. We should not think that we are so powerful on our own that through our experiences with Maya, we understand that it's all an illusion. And besides, maybe you have what you think is a good upbringing, good traditions in your family, so therefore you think, no, I'll be all right. I can go without hearing and chanting about Krishna. There'll be no negative effects. We should all think the truth, how helpless we are in this material world, and how we cling to hearing and chanting about Krishna like we cling to a life preserver if you're drowning in the ocean. How it is that we can survive without the Hare Krishna mantra and chanting in the association of devotees. How it is we think like that? It's amazing how these illusions come upon us. This morning I was watching the devotees chanting in kirtan and dancing. How could we live without that? You might think, oh, I am a pious person, or I have been around in bhakti for a while. Enough is enough. But no, we never get enough. This is the nature of real greed. We never get enough of hearing about Krishna, chanting Krishna's name, dancing in kirtan. Never enough. This is the platform of Srimad Bhagavatam. As stated by the sages at Naimisaranya, speaking to Sutta Goswami, Vayam tuna vachipyama uchama sloka vikramit yachchinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. We never tire of hearing about Krishna. Those who actually understand the essence of life know that the nectar of hearing about Krishna is there, increasingly fresher at every step. Swadu swadu pade pade. Those who actually know how to relish nectar. How to come to this realization? Persistence. We all know how to persist in getting what we want. Why not apply that persistence to hearing and chanting about Krishna? Everyone is convinced when someone persistently tries to please you. Similarly, Krishna, the Supreme Personality Godhead, he sees that his devotees are always eager to hear about him, to talk about him. So let's try to rise above the ritualistic stage in which, all right, we have to go to Prabhupada's Guru Puja, we have to sing, we have to dance, and then it is time for a Bhagavatam class. We have to sit down and listen. And then either we go to work or else we have duties to do at the temple every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Sometimes we get enlivened, but a lot of times we don't. And there's devotees around us we don't like. Besides, we're very busy. We have our work. We have our home. This makes bhakti so boring, doesn't it? But if we learn how to be greedy in bhakti, who here doesn't know how to be materially greedy? When there's very good prasad, you always want to eat more than you can. And of course, you'll get a stomachache and you'll get the reaction the next day. But to gorge on the processes of devotional service, that is the nectar of life. To come to the stage where you can't get enough. And as soon as you feel your mind starting to harass you, you know what that means. I have to have more Krishna. I need to chant more. I need to read Bhagavatam. I need to engage in selfless service to Krishna. This is what you do. This is how you strike back whenever your mind starts to harass you. And that's the nature of the mind in Kali Yuga. It's harassing. The whole environment in Kali Yuga is harassing you. So understand that's the way it's going to be. Your body and mind will harass you, but you have the means to conquer over them. As soon as your mind and body harass you, you think, okay, I have to arrange a more Krishna conscious day. You keep doing that, and gradually your conviction will increase. Your transcendental experience will increase. We're seeing here that Krishna is leaving Hastinapur. And the ladies are giving him farewell. They're greeting him on his way out. And they're talking. There's nothing unusual about ladies talking. I was talking to one Mataji yesterday, and reminding her of what it was like when she was between the ages of 20 and 25, surrounded by so many girls of the same age, and they were just talking, you know, Facebooking, interneting, texting, you know, this, that, the other, constantly, putting themselves in a tizzy. And then, magically, as soon as they get a little older, 27, 28, they look back and say, well, that was really dumb. These ladies are also talking, but they're talking about Krishna. Our policy is not silence, as you know. Our policy is to talk of Krishna. That is also the equivalent of silence. No material subject matter. So if we can learn how to talk about Krishna and Krishna's service, that is the best thing in life. And we'll never get tired of that. We'll never look back and say, oh, well, when I was between the ages of 20 and 25, all I did was talk about Krishna. I will never regret that. So you can, all right, you want to Facebook and text. You can Facebook and text and internet all about Krishna.
So Krishna is leaving Hastinapura. The ladies are talking.
And how is Krishna responding? He's smiling.
And he's glancing over them. The Bhagavatam says, Narikshanena, by his grace of glancing over them.
Krishna's glance is as good as Krishna. Krishna's glance is the full personality of Godhead. His smile is the full personality of Godhead. So don't take it to be so insignificant. Krishna's only smiling at them as he's leaving. He's casting his glance over them. What is the big deal about that? It is an infinitely big deal. That's why Krishna's glances are so famous. His lotus-like eyes, how they glance this way and that way. All of Vrindavan is captivated by Krishna's glances. And Krishna is captivated by the glances of his girlfriends. They are careful when others are around to only glance at Krishna out of the corners of their eyes. But sometimes when no others are around, they can stare at Krishna full on. And they bring him into their heart through the openings of their eyes. And once Krishna's in their heart, they embrace him there. And Krishna, from within their heart, returns their embrace. This is the perfection of yoga. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yogi nam api sarvesha madgatenantarapana shradhavam bhajate yomam. Of all different types of yogis, the greatest is the one who's always thinking of me, rendering transcendental loving service to me. That's the greatest yogi. So in Vrindavan, the gopis show that they are the topmost yogis. They now have to stare at Krishna and take him through the openings of their eyes, into their heart, and embrace him there, and feel Krishna's return of the embrace. So never think that Krishna's glance is an ordinary thing. He's giving mercy in that way by his glance. He's giving full association with it by his glance. We hope and pray that one day Krishna, as the deity, will glance upon us. The deity is not different from Krishna. If you daily approach the deity in that way, Krishna will respond when he wants to. You cannot hold Krishna to your schedule. All right, I did this for you. When are you going to do something that? You can save that attitude for your household life. I was nice to you. When are you going to be nice to me? Those constant negotiations, I observe, are always going on. I did this, why don't you do that? But you can't hold that schedule up to Krishna. We do everything for Krishna, knowing that in his perfect timing, he'll respond. And when Krishna does respond with his perfect timing, we always agree, this was the right time. I wouldn't have appreciated it so much before. It's a lesson for us to learn that Krishna is completely independent. But if we come to the point where Krishna can trust us, then he loves to come under our control. This is the extraordinary characteristic of Bhagavan. Vrijavashyata. He loves to become under the control of his servants. So we're hearing about Yudhisthira Maharaj. Yudhisthira Maharaj is concerned that Krishna is about to leave Hastinapura. And Yudhisthira knows, even though Krishna has no hostility in him, there are those who are hostile toward him, out of envy, asuras, demons. Yudhisthira himself is known as a Jataksatru. His enemy has never been born. So you might say, well, why is it that Yudhisthira is a Jataksatru? His enemy has never been born.
And yet he has to think about Krishna's defense. Evidently Krishna has enemies. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has enemies. Whereas Yudhisthira, his devotee, is known as a Japa Shatru. His enemies never been born. What's going on here? Actually, Krishna has no enemies, but there are those who see him in that way. In other words, Krishna doesn't cause enmity. He doesn't cause that there are enemies. But due to bewilderment by the illusory energy, there are those who think that Krishna is their enemy. And so they attack Krishna. But actually, because they somehow or other come in contact with Krishna, they benefit. Any way you come in contact with Krishna, you come out better. Even if you are an enemy who attacks Krishna. Of course, the Shastra recommends that you contact Krishna favorably. But even if you contact Krishna unfavorably, you still benefit. You're killed and you get liberation from material existence. You don't get bhakti. The bhaktas look upon liberation as silly. Why is that? Why should a bhakta long for freedom from material existence when you have devotional service, which itself is freedom from material existence? So the bhakta simply longs for devotional service. So Yudhisthira, out of affection, out of affection, wants to protect Krishna. Krishna needs someone's protection? Of course not. But the devotee, out of love, is thinking like that, and Krishna allows the devotee to do that service. Just like when Krishna, it's mentioned in the purport, demonstrates helplessness of childhood. He shows his dependency on Yashoda Mata. Oh, I'm hungry. And Yashoda Mata thinks, but first, before you eat, you need a bath, because you've been playing with your friends and you have sand and other particles of dust on you. When is the Supreme Personality of Godhead ever impure? And in Vrindavan, everything is spiritual. The dust, the leaves, the grass. But out of service, Mother Yashoda thinks, oh, Krishna, you need a bath. You've been playing. And you must be fatigued and very hungry. I have to cook for you. So in this way, Krishna allows himself to be helpless so that Mother Yashoda can love him in that way. Sometimes people have the conception that God is the father. That means God will serve them because parents serve the children. Those of you who have children, you know that. You're always serving the children all the time. So the bhakta, as you know, would rather serve Krishna than put Krishna in the position as God the Father to serve the devotee. I was listening once to Srila Prabhupada explain that actually, children torture their parents. Give me this, give me that. It's actually torture. But the parents think, oh, it's my child. They're being tortured, but actually, the parents are thinking there's nectar. I have to do this for the child. Who's going to watch the child? Who's going to give the child this or that? Yes, yes, I'm coming, I'm coming. all right, okay, yes. It's actually torture. But the parents don't see it that way. Oh, what an opportunity to exchange loving affairs with the children. So, that mentality is there because it originates in the spiritual world. Krishna will become your child and he'll torture you. He'll steal butter. He'll break into people's houses and cause commotion. Put Mother Yashoda into transcendental anxiety. So higher than, much higher, far higher than making God the Father and our fulfiller. Much higher is that you become the father and mother of Krishna and you fulfill his demands. This is how high bhakti is. So Yudhisthira is insisting
Krishna,
you need protection. I have my armies of horses, elephants, infantry. They'll accompany you so that no enemies will bother you.
Now Krishna can do everything for himself.
But out of affection, he accepted Yudhisthira's arrangements.
Also, Krishna's playing the part
of Yudhisthira's younger cousin. So he's subordinating himself to his elder cousin. And his elder cousin, Yudhisthira, out of affection. And fear. Oh, there's so many enemies, persons who are against Krishna. I have to be careful to protect Krishna.
So why does Krishna have enemies?
Not that Krishna does anything to produce enemies,
but due to distortion by the material energy, some people see that Krishna is their enemy. So actually Krishna still has no enemies. He doesn't ever do anything to cause enemies.
You may say, but he kidnapped Rukmini, and therefore Shishupal and all the princes were so angry.
But everything belongs to Krishna. Rukmini is his eternal associate. He's just taking what belongs to him. Still, he has no enemies, you see. Krishna does his affairs, but others, they get in the way. Real life means everything is Krishna's way. We don't like that.
The demons, they are very much against that point. Why does everything have to be Krishna's way? I was speaking at Melbourne Uni yesterday. We had a very nice program. So many people came. And so there were a few challenging questions. They had to see, let's test this Swami. Can he withstand our powerful academic challenges? So one girl, she questioned,
how can you say that consciousness indicates the spiritual self? When we can see that when the child is born, its awareness is very low, and then as the child grows, the awareness increases. So that shows you that consciousness is material. It comes from the body. So I had to explain to her that.
Does she think that as soon as the baby pops out of the womb, presto, consciousness appears out of nowhere?
And where does it appear from?
Just because it may seem that consciousness is correlated to bodily growth due to different levels of awareness, doesn't mean that consciousness itself is a material phenomenon. So whether it's baby consciousness or adult consciousness, what is the source of the original consciousness? Whether it manifests in the baby's body or adult's body.
Or, I said, are you saying that as soon as the baby comes out of the womb, something known as consciousness jumps out of the baby?
So then someone else asked the question that we all know everything came from evolution.
We all know that. So he actually said it very innocently, like, it, you know, he didn't understand. This is the point. They don't understand their programming. I was trying to point out to them in my lecture their assumptions, the false bases of their thinking. But still, he raised his hand. So we all know everything came about through evolution. So it's obvious that at some point, consciousness came from evolution. So I simply asked him, will you please kindly tell me the evolutionary steps in the development of consciousness? There's so much controversy just about the evolutionary steps in terms of the body. So I didn't get into that. Even someone can challenge that. But I said, just show me the different phases of the development of consciousness, how it evolved, the various links. Show me all that. He was silent. So then after the talk was over, the girl came to question me further. She actually didn't come to question me. She sat down to put me in my place. But, you know, your presentation offended me because I am a rational atheist. And your presentation was very biased against persons like me. You were inconsiderate of our position, the rational atheist. You should be more sensitive to persons like us. You, in your presentation, imply that there's something crazy about being a rational atheist. I never did that. I would never do such a thing. You imply that there's something defective in the thinking of rational atheists. I said, me? How could you ever accuse me of such? She went on and on like that. How I had offended the rational atheists. So, of course, at the university, we don't go there to debate and argue. It's not our university preaching engagements are not a debating club where the Haris go and show their prowess, you know. Who can I argue with? Who can I debate with? Where are all the atheists? Where are the demons? I'm ready. It's not for that. We give them a little philosophy, and we befriend them and give them nice facade. So, she chastised me for about 10 minutes that I had offended the rational atheists. And then she said, 1 minute you're speaking science, and the next minute you're quoting Krishna. Why can't you make up your mind? You give examples from science, and then you also quote Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. This is a flaw. You can't have it both ways. And said, anyway, all those books you wrote were written by guys. And Krishna is a guy. She was also, besides rational atheist, she was a radical feminist. So the problem with, you know, your books is that they're all written by guys. And that Krishna, he's a guy. This is the radical feminism. In other words, it's men who have screwed up the world. Men are insensitive. They're gross. But ladies with their nurturing, kind, caring nature put the world in their control, and the world will be a much better place. But it's the men who're screwing everything up. This is radical feminism. Anyway, I didn't say anything. She's went on and on. You know, Krishna's a guy. The Shastra, your Shastra's all written by guys. So I said, what are you going to say to that? I said, I think I'm tired. Oh, it's a long day. It's been a long day. I'm tired. Then she got a little upset. You're not going to argue with me? I'm just tired. But then she got up to leave and said, well, anyway, I just come here to eat. I said, so do I. So, afterwards, after that, Gopa Brindis came up to tell me that she comes all the time to the gatherings, and you know, she just takes prasad. So I said, fine, let her do that. So just to show her that I did have consideration and appreciation of the rational atheist, while she was taking prasad, I walked all the way up to her and said, can I bring you more prasad? Since you just come here to eat, you know? So you see, Krishna has no enemies, but they're persons who think the way they think. What can Krishna do? She has an attitude about Krishna, yet she's attracted to Krishna prasad. There are many persons who say all kinds of garbage, but actually they have some attraction for Krishna. So you can't take it so seriously all the time. She's saying one thing, but with her tongue she's taking prasad. She obviously is attracted to prasad. So she just dismisses it all. Anyway, regardless of what you all say here, I just come for eating. Fine, okay, very good. Keep coming for eating. So gradually become purified.
You know the example I told of, there was in the early 70s in New York, whenever there was a Harinam party, they would always distribute back to Gaudiya magazines, and so they would have the back, behind the chanting party, they, which at those times was like 20 or 30 devotees, they would have a box of BTGs and a box of prasad for distribution. So there was one person, whenever he would see the chanting party, he knew behind them is the box of back to Gaudiya. So he would always come along and steal the box, just to confiscate the Hari's literature and, you know, throw it away. He would do this again and again. Everyone would turn around to distribute back to Gaudiya. Where's the box? It's gone. So he would just keep throwing boxes away of magazines that he had stolen. And then one day he showed up at the temple. He said, you know, I've thrown away so many boxes of your magazines. One day I decided to read one. And he became a devotee. So, in order to do outreach in this Kali Yuga, one has to be tolerant and not increase the inimical nature of persons, because they speak so many things, they don't know what they're talking about. It's not like the same in India, where you have Mayavadis and other blasphemers who are very apparently erudite, very well spoken, who have formulated their demoniac conclusions over many lifetimes. It's not like that here. Here people just say whatever comes into their mind. I'm a rational atheist. They have to be something. So you can't take it all so seriously. So the rational atheist loves prasad. So we encourage it. Just go on taking prasad. Krishna has no enemies. But persons, because they've taken shelter of the illusory energy, they see that they have a problem with Krishna. But Krishna is all good. Whatever he does, even when he kills, it's for the betterment of the person. You benefit immeasurably however you contact Krishna. So Yudhisthira, he's worried about those who are inimical to Krishna. They may attack. And so he's arranged armies to protect Krishna, although Krishna protects everyone. And this is the mystery of Srimad Bhagavatam. The love of the devotee and the self-sufficiency of Krishna, how those two things interact. In such a way that Krishna will depend on the love of his devotee as if Krishna is helpless and can't protect himself. All right, any questions? Yes. Goes beyond yourself?
Yes, all our motivations and all our what we think we want to get out of it, what we want to achieve, other than speaking Krishna.
Well, what give me an example. To get a nice husband. What?
Well, people will see, I think it's done well, people will appreciate this.
And then you get a nice husband. Well, that's true. We don't mind. Do service nice, you get a nice husband. Fine.
Huh?
After. Oh, I see. Then what? Huh? Like what?
It's like wanting to, achieve things.
Achieve what? In whose eyes?
Well, I mean,
the
whole congregation should come up and say, "You are so important, you are so competent." What do you sing in the morning at Mangalarti? Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. Yasya prasada, nagati vito. You're trying to please Krishna by pleasing Krishna's devotee. Then, even if there's material failure, it's actually still a success. We're trying to please Krishna by pleasing Krishna's devotee. That's beyond material conceptions of success and failure. So try to understand that. Anything else? Yes?
How do we develop the patience to be able to deal with Krishna's reciprocation much better? Because sometimes we're not patient in the way Krishna expertly reciprocates with us.
Oh, we think that he's too slow.
Yeah, he's too slow. He
doesn't know what's going on. That's why we need the association of devotees. Because, you see, the material world is built on promising you immediate gratification. So we apply those same conceptions to Krishna. We apply the same schedule, timetable. We need to detach ourselves from the materialistic culture that promises immediate gratification. The whole world is so addicted to that instant sense gratification. We need to be purified from the mode of passion. That's why the mode of passion looks attractive to our polluted eyes. Immediately you can make something happen and get some gratification. Even you know it's not going to fulfill you, but at least there's something right away. That's how Maya presents it. So we need to become purified of these lower modes of nature and not hold a material schedule up to Krishna. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? What have you done for me lately? I've been doing so much service, going through so many austerities. I'm even chanting your name. What more do you want out of me? Krishna knows how to produce the best love in us. We're on the path for developing love of Krishna. This is Krishna's explanation why he disappeared from the gopis. He wanted to increase their love. So even in the beginning stages of bhakti, Krishna knows how to handle us so that we'll become qualified to be candidates for pure love of him. That goes on from the very beginning. Krishna's training us to become candidates. These ladies in Dwarka, Krishna saying goodbye to them. He's smiling at them. He's casting his glance over them. Now you might say, "Oh, that's the big deal. Glances, smiles." At this stage of Kali Yuga, people consider that's just nothing, you know. But on the spiritual plane, Krishna's glances and smiles are infinitely everything. So we need to readjust our mentality back to our original loving nature with Krishna. We need to renovate our mentality out of motive passion expectations of instant material gratification. This is all part of being purified. Yes? That you always are thinking of his interests. Is it so mysterious in your relationships with others that you see that they have what you consider your interests at heart, and you trust them? And if
They do something that you think indicates they're not acting in your welfare, then you get angry, right? You get hurt. How could you do this to me? Krishna is also a person. Through devotional service, we show Krishna that we care. And then he can trust us. Steadfastness. Day after day of always thinking of Krishna's interests. That impresses Krishna. That's a lifetime career. To impress Krishna by impressing Krishna's devotee. It's easier to impress Krishna's devotee than to impress Krishna. So there are opportunities to impress Krishna by impressing Krishna's devotee. That will give us the real and full fulfillment that we're looking for. All right. Yes? Arguments are very well.
The arguments seems very difficult to defeat.
Are you kidding me? Arguments are very easy to defeat. Just by the glare of Maya, the arguments look powerful. They're actually not. If one has time, which most devotees don't, you can't. Be aware of their arguments. But most of us don't have time for that. And we're not a debating society anyway. They say, I'm a rational atheist. They want to argue. Just pop a samosa in their mouth. How can they argue then? Good. That's our program. Auckland, New Zealand is one devotee. He's from India and he came to Auckland to study. He's got something like 3 master's degrees. And he thought he was very sophisticated and knowledgeable. So he was walking on the street one day, and a Sankirtan Brahmachari approached him, showed him Bhagavad Gita. And of course, this person, he was a non-devotee at the time, he just dismissed it off. Bhagavad Gita. How is it that you are following such folklore? This is something my grandmother would have read. Don't you know? I have three master's degrees: business administration, economics, and marketing. So the devotee who only had a high school degree said, "All right, I appreciate that you are so educated with your 3 master's degrees. Can you kindly tell me what is life and where does life come from?" And so the person gave back some standard answer. Well, life has arisen by chance over billions of years through interaction of matter. And the devotee just told him a simple answer that he had read in Prabhupada's books. Nope, life comes from life. If you want to say life comes from matter, you must prove it. There's the supreme life, and then from the supreme life comes life. And the person was totally astonished. He told me that I felt totally defeated. Of course, life comes from life, and there's never been anyone to show that life comes from matter. And he said, I couldn't believe it. My 3 master's degrees, I was defeated by this young man who only went to high school.
So he decides, let me find out where he gets his knowledge from. So he came to our outreach center, the loft in Auckland, and now he's a full-time devotee. He said, I was impressed by this person's ability not to be intimidated by me, and to give me an answer that I had to think about. I was impressed by his purity and his lack of confusion. And then he said, of course, I came to the loft, and then when I started tasting the prasad, I understood, yes, this is the absolute truth. Whether Three Masters agrees or not, when I tasted the prasad, I understood, Well, that's how it works. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.